This is the rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina. Coming up on the show, a conversation with an astrobiologist on the search for life on Mars. And later, the World Cup officially kicks off today. We asked UF students what summer sports they can't miss. But first, when you're thinking about buying your first house, what do you look for? Open kitchen concept, maybe a big lawn. But when a couple in Bradford County bought their house a few years ago, it came with something they weren't expecting: water contamination. WUFT's Madison Ginsburg has the story.
When you walk into the home of Michelle and Brad Green in Stark, their two dogs, Murphy and Rosie, want to say hello.
The dogs are going to be all over you if you're okay with that.
I sit with the couple on their white, fluffy couch. They say they moved here in 2019 to be closer to family.
It's nice because you know everybody, yeah. You know, when you drive through the town, you actually wave at people.
But a few months after moving in, the couple noticed a man in their yard. He had been hired to help test their water quality because it was contaminated. Michelle Green.
No, we were not told when we bought the house about it at all.
But it wasn't until January 2026 the couple received an official notice that their water was polluted. This came from the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. So the Greens called their neighbor, Brad Hildreth. He's lived here since the 70s.
I mean, we have a lot of senior adults here.
Hildreth says about 20 years ago, he received a notice from the state that their wells were going to be monitored because trichloroethylene had shown up in the water. That's a solvent commonly found in dry cleaning.
Well, anyhow, there was considerable amounts that were recordable over there. So then the state took action and they went through and tested all of our wells.
They are known carcinogens and they can cause a lot of adverse health problems.
This is Scott Smith, a water and soil expert.
Everything from bleeding to brain fog to respiratory issues and cancer.
Smith says even if neighbors aren't actively using their well water, they are constantly exposed to the contaminants. The Greens, Hildreth and I, all bundled up in their truck to see the neighborhood wells.
Here's three ground monitoring wells right here. Yeah, and why there's three, I don't know.
Now, Brad and Michelle Green don't drink their water. Hildreth says the water does get filtered.
But when we change the filters once a month, you pull them out, they were orangey, brown. They were nasty.
But early on, he didn't know this. And for years, he and his family had been drinking it. And after almost five decades in this community, he started to notice something. Neighbors were dying of cancer.
My father died of brain cancer. Mr. Harold had passed away from cancer. Mr. Albert Longchamp, he had cancer. His son-in-law, Jerry, passed away.
Patterns of cancers, but without any answers. They couldn't help but cast a suspicious eye at their tap water. Right now, all neighbors can do is ask the city for help, cleaning up the city's own water. At this April 7th commission meeting in early 2026, commissioners voted to give the DEP full access to a property right near their home.
Not all in favor, but sign aye.
Aye.
Earphones. Thank you.
Public records revealed that this property is contaminated and is likely responsible for spreading pollutants into this community.
They're monitoring it, hoping that someday it'll be gone, and they can say it's not a problem anymore.
Michelle and Brad Green tell me they fell in love with their home, but they want to live here with no worries of pollutants or cancers or contaminants. But right now, they just don't want to get their hopes up. Madison Ginsburg, WUFT News. The sole candidate for University of Florida president is one step closer to assuming the position. Yesterday afternoon, Dr. Stuart Bell was interviewed by UF trustees about his qualifications and aspirations for the university. WUFT's Stryker Anderson was at that meeting and has this report.
All of the trustees held a favorable view of Dr. Bell. They all essentially praised him and the job that he did at the University of Alabama. They talked from things all about DEI to the treatment of Jewish students on campus. Dr. Bell really emphasized that he wanted to elevate the University of Florida to a top position as a public university across the nation. He emphasized how he brought the University of Alabama to be an R1 research institution and said that he could use his skill sets here at the University of Florida. During the conversation, it seemed that people were really engaged with what Dr. Bell was saying. His comments were met with nods and even some laughter. It seemed that Dr. Bell was trying to assure faculty, staff, and students that he was there to make the university better and advance the university's position. There was one trustee, Dan O'Keefe, who had multiple questions about the University of Alabama's previous stance on DEI and their DEI initiatives. Dr. Bell said he's not going to bring DEI or, quote, woke to the university, and he says he'll work within the constraints of DEI at the University of Florida to ensure that he follows all regulations. So from here, Dr. Bell will go before the Florida Board of Governors, where they ultimately have the final say in his appointment.
That was WUFT's Stryker Anderson reporting. If the Board of Governors confirms Bell, he will become UF's 14th president. Bell would be the university's first full-time president in almost 2 years since former UF president Ben Sass resigned in July 2024. You can read more about Bell's approval at our website, WUFT.org. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont Spina. Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. What was the original purpose for the building that now serves as the Micanopy Town Hall? Was it A, the school, B, the general store, or C, the post office? Stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. June is Gun Violence Awareness Month in Gainesville. The city has partnered with organizations in the community to host events throughout this month. WUFT's Tess Lippincott spoke with gun violence prevention expert Brittany Coleman last Friday on Gun Violence Awareness Day. Coleman is the manager of the city's program. Tess began by asking what the community should know about gun violence.
I think when we think about gun violence, you know, sometimes we tend to think about it in only one way, like it's just community-based violence. But we know that gun violence impacts a lot of people, and it shows up in a lot of different ways. So whether it's domestic violence, community-based violence, suicide, we want people to know that there is support, there's resources available. If people want to know how to get involved, there are opportunities for that as well, and coming to our events is a great opportunity to do that. They're free, they're open to the public, and we'd love to have anybody who's interested.
Obviously, this is, it's June, it's Gun Violence Prevention Month. Kind of what do you hope that somebody will kind of get from recognizing these days?
For us, this month is about honoring first and foremost people who've been like mostly impacted by gun violence. So, you know, our first event was a memorial where we honored survivors, we honored their families, because I think it's important to be grounded in the why of why we do this before anything else. These types of events and awareness months in general just give us the opportunity to create more buzz and visibility around it.
When you know, you hear an instance of gun violence in our community, kind of what is the first thing that you guys work to do in terms of reaction, response, kind of anything like that?
Our role specifically is to attend to the needs of the community. So we work with the police department, we work with Alachua County, Victim Services, the Crisis Center, to attend to people who've been impacted. And one of the ways that we do that is through our community care call-outs, which is an opportunity for us to bring counselors, law enforcement, our violence interrupter staff, other staff across the city, and go directly into those neighborhoods or the communities where the incident happened, check on people, offer services. But our goal is to always look at the needs of the community and try to respond to that.
How did you get into doing this? Like, gun violence prevention, how did you kind of get into this specific, you know, field?
Personally, my background is in crisis work. It's in victim services, crisis intervention, community organizing. And it felt like just a really good fit with understanding trauma, understanding how to work in communities. With that background and knowing that the city had this commitment, it just felt like a really great fit.
That was gun violence prevention expert Brittany Coleman speaking with WUFT's Tess Lippincott about Gainesville's Gun Violence Awareness Month. This is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina. Coming up on the show, I spoke with an astrobiologist who's looking for life on other planets. That's coming up after the break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina. With the success of the Artemis II mission earlier this year and the announcement of the Artemis III crew this week, there seems to be a renewed public interest in space and space exploration. So, to dive into the topic a bit further, I spoke with Amy Williams. She's an astrobiologist and geobiologist at the University of Florida, and she worked on both the Curiosity and Perseverance Mars rovers. A recently published study of hers found evidence of simple organic carbon molecules on Mars, some of which had never been found on the planet before. I began our conversation by asking her to explain her research.
I'm interested as a researcher in whether there's life beyond Earth. And I try to address that question by working with missions that are capable of addressing that question on Mars or on the icy outer ocean worlds of Enceladus or Europa. I bring kind of geology, microbiology, and chemistry together to try to address these questions and think about, you know, what does life as we know it require and how can we search for it?
Tell me a little bit about some of the research that you've been able to do.
As an astrobiologist, you know, trying to figure out how to search for evidence of life, ancient life on Mars, it's almost certainly never going to be a slam dunk that we have found evidence of life. But what I've been able to do is work with an instrument suite on board the Curiosity rover. It is able to detect organic carbon, and organic carbon makes up all life as we know it. And so I'm curious, in using the data that we get back from that instrument and try to understand if we can pick apart, is it made by life or is it not? And so far, unfortunately for an astrobiologist, the answer is we can't really tell. And so that's the challenge. And trying to be very confident in a statement like, you know, if you found life on Mars, you need to make sure you're absolutely sure, because it's such a profound discovery. And that's what we're trying to be very responsible with our data analysis and careful about, making sure we get it right when we do get it right.
You're not just an astrobiologist, you're also a geobiologist, and you study life on mostly inhospitable parts of the planet. How do those two things relate, and what can life on Earth tell us potentially about life on other planets?
So, coming from a geologist perspective, I've been very interested in how life on Earth can be preserved in rocks. And so that can be actually relatively recent preservation of active communities of bacteria living in the environment. But we can also see that evidence for that bacteria preserved in very old rocks in the order, in some cases, of billions of years. And so I like to look at both really old rocks and then also rocks that form in, as you described, inhospitable environments. So for the microbes, they're very happy living there. It's, you know, maybe acid mine drainage for us and it would, you know, burn our skin. But these microbes are very happy to live there. And so I think, part of the drive in exploring these extreme environments in my research is sometimes they're a really good model for the types of environments, not only that were on Mars in the past, but that are on Mars today. And that helps us to understand, all right, how is life surviving in these extreme environments on Earth, to give us insight into how to search for evidence of life in extreme environments beyond Earth.
We've grown up for decades now with various sci-fi books, movies, TV shows. You know, in your professional opinion, how close are we to actualizing something like a sci-fi version of getting to Mars? And what do you think life on other planets is going to look like?
The science fiction that we've grown up with, in some cases, had turned into science fact. And I think it's really exciting to see some of basically our dreams realized into things that we can do, smartphones, watches that, you know, track our heartbeat, and you can make phone calls on. I mean, like all of this stuff that was totally made up, you know, even 50 years ago. So, you know, I think that right now we are taking concepts that are still kind of science fiction, being able to send humans on deep space, long distance, interstellar travel, and we're working toward the ability to make that reality. So there are all of these conditions that have to be met, of course, for humans to survive in a spacecraft it at, you know, full speed. I think we could maybe get humans to Mars in 6 months if we used a bunch of fuel and we went at closest approach. And 6 months, I mean, I don't care how close you are with someone, I feel like 6 months in a little space capsule is too much. And so there's, you know, the physical and psychological needs of the astronauts. And then once you land on Mars, it's freezing. There's no oxygen. There's a very thin atmosphere. And you really have to develop these habitats for people to be able to function in. So it's not to say it's not possible, but, you know, it's not happening next year. It's not happening in, you know, maybe even in a decade without a substantial investment. But I certainly want it to be done in a responsible and ethical way, in a safe way, right? Our astronauts would deserve to be able to come home and tell us about their incredible experience. And so it's a balance. I'm excited about the day when we do send a crewed mission to Mars, and I just want to see it done properly.
Amy Williams, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
That was UF astrobiologist Amy Williams talking about her research looking for evidence of life on Mars. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. As a reminder, our trivia question this week: what was the original purpose for the building that serves as the Micanopy Town Hall? Was it A, the school, B, the general store, or C, the post office? The answer's coming up at the end of the show. That's after a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. As we count down the hours until the first game of the World Cup, all eyes are on the hosting countries: Mexico, Canada, and the United States. WUFT's Natalia Lopez wanted to know, what are the sports that people are watching this summer? So she headed out across the University of Florida campus and asked this question: what is one sporting event you are most likely going to watch this summer, and why?
Hi, my name is Jaron Papali. Probably the World Cup, because it is in the United States and it's a fun event every 4 years.
What do you think it's going to bring, you know, to the state?
You know, I hope it's a great event, and I hope that some of the talk about the cost of tickets and things doesn't overshadow, and hopefully people are still able to find a way to make it to games and we can put on a good show for the rest of the world.
Hi, my name is Emma Betances. I guess I'll be watching the FIFA, the World Cup. I played when I was very, very little, but I know that's something that's happening in Miami, and that's where I'm from. But when I was walking with my dad this past weekend, we were walking by the boardwalk, and we saw, like, the FIFA balls from, like, each of the countries, which was cool.
Do you think it's good that's being hosted in Miami? Like, what do you think about that?
I think that it's definitely something that's good for the city, and bringing in, like, different people and stuff like that. I also think Miami is very lively, and with Hispanic culture, with, like, soccer, I think it's a great match.
My name is Andre Aviz Vasconcelos. I'm a huge Formula One fan. I've been following it for probably over 8 years now. All-time Ayrton Senna, but of the current grid, Max Verstappen and Kimi Antonelli. Originally, I'm from Anguilla. It's an island in the Caribbean.
How did you get into, like, racing in general?
Growing up, my parents are both big fans of Senna, so I grew up, like, hearing the stories about him and stuff, and I got into Formula One because of them. Hopefully, in the near future, I could go to a race in person. I'm planning to go into Austin Grand Prix.
My name is Kelly Yu. This summer, I'm not sure what sports are available to watch, but if I had to pick a sport out of all of them, I'd probably say volleyball. I used to play volleyball in high school, and I think watching it is so cool. Like, a lot of my friends who don't play volleyball, they really like the team interaction and, like, how the volleys go.
My name is Rodrigo Flores. The World Cup, like everyone else, I grew up playing soccer, so I always watch it.
Did you watch the last World Cup? What did you think about it?
I kind of cried.
Why did you cry?
I don't know. It was just a really good game. I'm not even like that much of a Messi fan, but it was just like such a good game. Well, I mean, Argentina was winning the whole game. Then Mbappe like locked in and then just scored, and then Messi scored, and then penalties. It was just the emotion of just watching it.
My name is Baldwin Barnes. I mean, it's got to be the World Cup. There's nothing sad. It's every 4 years, but because it's every 4 years, there's such a good build-up to it.
Did you grow up watching it?
Yeah, I played when I was younger, and so I supported Liverpool, and then internationally, I always liked Messi. Because if not Messi, then I would want to see Ronaldo win just for the love of the game.
My name is Anthony Perez.
What's a sporting event you're likely going to watch this summer, and why?
Probably the World Cup, because my roommate will probably have it on 24/7.
So what do you know about soccer?
Not much.
What ball knowledge do you know about the best player in the world?
It's probably Messi. I feel like when you think of soccer, you think of Messi.
So are you rooting for Argentina or Portugal?
Probably Portugal. No, because I think it's like Ronaldo's last World Cup, so it's like...
Final answer. Final answer and explanation.
Portugal, because I visited Portugal, and I went into CR7 gym for free, and they didn't charge me.
So what summer sports are you likely to be watching this summer? Those were responses from students in and around the University of Florida. Incidentally, if you're not that familiar with soccer, the reference to CR7 that you just heard there is a reference to Cristiano Ronaldo, whose jersey number is 7. That story was produced by WUFT's Natalia Lopez. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. The team that made this show possible this week includes Dave Bariswain, Dana Hill, Madison Ginsburg, Stryker Anderson, Tess Lippincott, Natalia Lopez, and Emiliano Luna. Our trivia question this week was, what was the original purpose for the building that now serves as the Micanopy Town Hall? Was it A, the school, B, the general store, or C, the post office? The answer is A, the school. Originally built in 1895, the building was repurposed as the town hall in 1973. Special thanks to Bill Harlan and the Micanopy Historical Society for their help with the trivia question this week. That's it for the Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina.